Enchanted Sky Media.
This is Code 3, the podcast for firefighters. Now, here's your host, Scott Orr.
Thank you for joining me on another edition of Code 3. My guest today is a fire chief who is in a unique position. Scott Freitag was originally hired as the chief of the Chino Valley, Arizona Fire Department, but not long after he was hired, Chino Valley combined forces with the larger Central Yavapai Fire District. When the blending, as it was called, was complete, Freitag was in command of the new Central Arizona Fire and Medical Authority. And Scott Freitag joins me now by phone. Hello, Chief.
Hey, good morning, Scott. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Well, it's been a wild ride for you so far.
Yeah, a little more than I anticipated.
So you didn't expect anything like this when you joined Chino Valley Fire?
No, when I left St. Louis, I was coming to Arizona, was just going to take the chief's position of a three-station agency. I had talked with the fire chief of Central Yavapai before coming out, and he said, look, I'm going to work another 5 years. These agencies have tried to come together in the past. Maybe we can work out a plan over the next 5 years to figure it out. And 5 years turned into more like 5 months.
Yeah, he was unfortunately let go, which sort of opened the door for you, although you didn't realize it at the time, I imagine.
No, I was, when Paul Neese left, I was talking with Scott Blitz, who took the interim position. And, you know, we were just discussing, hey, are there opportunities here that we could take advantage of? And initially the answer was, well, we don't think so because we couldn't merge. The mill rates were too far apart. We couldn't consolidate because the mill rates were too far apart. And so we talked about a joint powers authority, but politically it just wasn't feasible at the time. And it was about Christmas 2013, just before the Christmas break, and I said, hey, I just ran across this thing called a joint management agreement online. Let's take a look at that. And that kind of started the process for us.
So aside from convincing the public that this was not a merger, what's been your biggest challenge?
You know, I think you're right, convincing the public that it wasn't a merger. But being the first fire authority in the state of Arizona, there are some things that you have to work through and figure out how to approach it. And having three boards, three budgets, three audits, an attorney that's covering three different agencies all at the same time, that gets to be a bit of a handful. And you know, we call them board meeting marathon days now because we're starting board meetings about 3:30, and because of everything that's going on, we're not getting done until 7:30. But overall, I think it's been well worth it. Somebody asked me recently, would you do it again? You know, because the fire authority seems like a lot of extra work. And I said, I would, because from a community perspective, one of efficiency and sustainability, and being fiscally responsible, you can't shy away from significant fiscal savings because the work to get there is difficult, time consuming.
Yeah, and that makes sense given that you now have essentially a much larger fire department than you had with the two separate ones. And then you have the automatic aid agreement with the city of Prescott, which kind of makes all three of them like one big family. Now, people have heard of mutual aid, but automatic aid is a little different. Is that unusual?
You know, it's not. Actually, where I came from, just outside of the city of St. Louis, automatic aid was just natural. It's the only thing I've ever known in my career. And that's just making sure that we're doing the best we can for the public. So it doesn't matter what the fire engine or ambulance says on the side. It's all about who's closer to the 911 call.
Now, let's talk personnel. The NFPA says you should have firefighters per engine, and I think it says 6 per truck company. But with budget realities, your agency is like a lot of others, and you only staff 3 per engine, and the same 3 for a truck. How do you guys work around that limitation?
You know, the NFPA standard is a good standard. It's a good recommendation, but in our area, trying to get staffing at 4 persons per engine just isn't fiscally feasible, because you're not just talking about one additional person per fire engine. You're talking about a number of additional people or going to a system what they call constant staffing. You may have seen some articles recently out of California looking at some of the departments out there and their significant overtime budgets. Well, that's because they follow the NFPA standard, 4 persons on an engine, and it's a constant staffing model. So if someone calls in sick or takes vacation, you're automatically paying overtime to fill that fourth seat. And that gets pretty pricey. So in our area, I don't see us getting to that. I would love to. It'd be great. We see a lot more efficiencies on the fire scene. But from a cost perspective, we're doing good to keep what we have now.
So when it comes to, let's say, a structure fire, how do you guys work around the limitation of being essentially one man down when you arrive?
You know, that goes back to your standard operating guidelines and how you approach a fire. We actually get less people at a fire, even with 3-person staffing here in this area, than I did back where I'm from. And outside of St. Louis, we didn't have 4-person staffing either. We had 3-person staffing. But we would end up with 4 engines, a ladder truck, a chief officer, potentially multiple chief officers, and an ambulance on every fire scene. And we'd have them there within about 6 minutes. Here, we get 3 engines, 3 to 4. And that's all you get on a first alarm assignment. So we're already starting out behind the eight ball. Not only do we only have 3 per engine, but we're getting fewer engines, which means the minimum number of people. So it's about efficiency. It's about training. Training is a key component to the fire service, especially when you have less manpower.
And my understanding is that you then bring more units if you need the same number of men. You may have more engines, for example.
That's correct. If we get on scene, if our battalion chief determines right away, hey, I need more people here, then we'll call for the additional personnel. But being up in rural Arizona creates its own challenges, because the reality is, between the city of Prescott and Central Arizona Fire and Medical Authority, we have 15 fire engines. That's it. Being down in the valley in Maricopa or some of the other areas surrounding Maricopa County, if you have a structure fire, you have a significant number of resources to call from. You've got Glendale, Mesa, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Peoria Fire, all of these different agencies that are very close together with a lot of resources available to them. So it doesn't take any time to backfill those when you're calling for more units. Up here, if we utilize all of our units, for example, I wasn't here then, but the Whiskey Row Fire in Prescott, that took all of the resources of the area, and the next closest units were coming from the Verde side. And you and I both know how long it can take to get resources over from the Verde side to this side. That mountain doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds a lot of time.
Right, and now let me interrupt for a second, because I talked to Chief Dennis Light of Prescott Fire, and he pointed out correctly that even if there's a multiple alarm fire going on that eats up all the resources, people are still going to be having heart attacks and whatever else.
Absolutely. And that's why we have to call the additional resources in. Now, Mayor Fire can come up, but they only have one engine. Groom Creek may come in, but they only have not even really one complete engine, because there's only 2 people on it. So resources are scarce. And getting the resources into the area, it's important that we call for additional assistance early and often. So if you think you're going to need them, at least get them started this way. You can always turn them around.
Now, having said all that, you guys do a pretty solid job of protecting public safety because mostly there are not major structure fires that require multiple alarms. I mean, we just had one overnight where you once again responded with Prescott Fire per automatic aid, but it wasn't multiple alarms. So as other things went on, there were still plenty of resources available for the community. Having said all of that, and I know it's a mouthful, do you think there will come a time that you'll run into a problem with not having enough resources? And at that time, do you think it's likely that, as I've seen in the past, people will say, well, why don't you have more?
You know, it's funny. Every time something big happens, and in this area, it's usually related to the wildland-urban interface, the Dosey Fire, for example. People were ecstatic about the number of resources we were able to bring to bear, as well as the other resources we were able to bring to call in for assistance from state and federal. So, you know, it's important to have those relationships up front. It's important to have the countywide mutual aid and to exercise that. It's important to have the statewide mutual aid and exercise that system as well. We don't have a lot of big fires here, and some of that is related to a lot of our homes and structures are newer. A lot of the building materials that we use are more fire resistant because people are in the wildland urban interface. The materials that we use in this area to construct a home are different, say, than what I was used to back outside the St. Louis metro, in that we have a lot more flame resistant in the materials that we use to build a home. Additionally, a lot of our homes and buildings are newer, and they're up to the latest fire safety standards, and that's important in reducing those. That said, if we do have a fire, it's likely going to be bigger, faster moving, and burn hotter. So it's important that we have those initial resources at the ready, and have everybody stationed where they need to be in order to make an effective attack on the fire. I can tell you my old house, again, back in Missouri, was vinyl siding. So if we had a fire in a house next door, and I saw this quite often, it wouldn't take long to start melting that siding off and getting down to that, to the OSB board that was used to side underneath the vinyl siding. Here you have stucco. It's a concrete covering, basically, a very light but concrete covering, and that makes a difference. So we need to keep up on things. We need to continue training. We need to ensure we have the resources as we continue to grow. There will come a time where we need more than what we have, and that's why we have to exercise these other systems.
Now, I think firefighters back east, and I mean Missouri and back east even further, would be a little surprised to learn that your guys have to fight wildland fires as well. And when they do that, they exercise an entirely different set of skills that they use for our structure fires. But what is that like to have sort of an all-risk department?
You know, it's interesting. I don't have a lot of background in the wildland urban interface. And, you know, it goes back to, once again, training and being prepared. We have the Central Arizona Regional Training Academy. Our folks spend a lot of time going through there and getting some hands-on training, whether it's structure fire or, wildland fire, talking about strategies and tactics. Our personnel, in my opinion, are very well trained. They're well versed in both the wildland, the structure, technical rescue, hazardous materials, emergency medical services, auto extrication and other rescues, high angle water rescue. Our folks are committed and they focus every day on how to be better at what they do. But because we live in this wildland urban interface, it is imperative that we take the time and effort to prepare our people. That's why I don't know if Prescott's this way. I don't know if Dennis said, but I know for us, we're one of a few agencies in the state of Arizona where we require every operations person to have a red card. And a red card is related to being able to fight a wildland fire. And we do that because we know resources are scarce, and that this is a danger to our community that we have to be prepared for.
All right, now let's talk about rigs. We've talked about new rigs in the past, and your last new one, which I believe was Indian 53, was a real monster. But you were suggesting that smaller engines may be the way of the future, and why is that?
Well, you know, as with anything, they usually say bigger is better, but I think we've surpassed that a little bit. And I know the new engines that we're ordering have smaller caps because the overall size and design of the engines, the engineers have just made them a little bit bigger. The longer they get, the heavier they get, the wider they get, the taller they get, you start running into problems with accessibility. Our engines have to be prepared not only for the suburban environment that is Prescott Valley proper, but also getting into the more rural environment, Dewey-Humboldt, outside of Chino Valley and Paulden, dealing with some unimproved road surfaces. So we can't have monster fire engines. We need to have equipment that is nimble, that is as light as we can get, to fit into the areas that we have to go to provide service. You know, firefighters like shiny things, and we can get those shiny things. We just have to make them a little bit smaller.
And looking toward the future, then, what about two-man rescue units? You've discussed that in the past. I know we're talking about less of a financial burden, but it still costs money to staff them. So where do you stand on that?
You know, I still want to move that direction in the future, and that's based on call volume. So if we look at Prescott Valley proper, I have four engines within a mile of each other or less in this area. And there's a lot of call volume here, so we need those engines. But as the call volume increases, we have to evaluate, do we try to shoehorn another fire engine into this area in this close proximity? Or is the increase in call volume related more to non-urgent, non-fire calls, so more EMS, alarm soundings, things like that? And if that's the case, then not building a brand new fire station, not hiring 12 personnel and staff at fire engine, not buying a $450,000 fire engine makes a lot more sense than trying to fit that into the system. It's just not necessary. And that's where we look at a two-person rescue. You're talking $100,000, $150,000 for a two-person rescue unit, utilizing it the way that I'd want to use it, which is, as we talked about, wildland urban interface. Does it make sense to have them on what we call a type 6 or a smaller truck, chassis, brush truck, and let them respond to EMS calls, but at the same time, they can respond to structure fires. They're prepared in a four-wheel drive vehicle with a small pump, so if we had a grass fire somewhere, they could respond to that and be an additional resource. I think from a cost-benefit perspective, it makes more sense to look at the idea of a rapid response vehicle or a two-person rescue than it does try to fit another fire engine in this area. Now, there's going to be other areas around us. We cover 248 square miles that as we become more populated, as the suburban areas expand, we will need additional fire engines, but I think we need to take a balanced approach.
And in terms of plans for the future, you do have plans in the long term for another station. What else do you have going on for the medium and long term?
You know, we do have a couple pieces of property. One down off Sarah Jane Lane, not sure exactly what we do with that. The other one is outside of Stone Ridge, and as Stone Ridge continues to expand in that area, behind Prescott Country Club expands, that'll be an important place strategically for an additional fire station. But we also know that Granville is expanding out towards 89A, that Glassford Heights is about a 3,000 home neighborhood that's going to develop along the 89A corridor off of Glassford. You have additional expansion north of 89A, out Antelope Meadows, Pronghorn area, Coyote Springs and Viewpoint. So we have to be mindful that things are going to grow to the north and we're going to need to shift or potentially add a new fire station. One of the ideas we have is if we can get some east-west connecting corridors between Antelope Meadows, Coyote Springs, and Viewpoint, then at some point we could consider taking Engine 59, moving it more north, and then trying to get some property closer to the Glassford Hill area and move an engine up a little more centrally located that would hit the 89A Fane Road corridor, but be able to provide services to Glassford Heights, Granville, and any other commercial development that happens, whether it's south of 89A or north of 89A.
All right, we'll leave it there. Chief Scott Freitag, thanks for being with me on the Code 3 podcast this week.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity.
And that is Code 3 for this week. Hey, if you have a photo of an engine, a truck, a Quint, or whatever that you're proud of, go to our website and send it in. We'll display it. Until next week, I'm Scott Orr. Thanks for listening to Code 3.
Code 3 is a production of Enchanted Sky Media. To get in contact with us, visit code3podcast.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. Don't miss an episode. Find us at the Apple iTunes Store, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.